You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Well. Hope you had a great weekend, everybody. Gang's all here, ready to go. Got our new home for those of you who are watching on Peacock. You can also listen, 362 radio affiliates around the country. Boys are here, ready to go. We'll talk to the great Al Michaels. He'll join us a little bit later on. Chris Webber, NBA on TNT after yesterday's fireworks in the postseason. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp at danpatrick.com, Twitter handle at DP Show. McLovin will come up with a poll question. Ethan does all of our stats. And, of course, who can forget the contributions that Ethan makes to this program? Good morning, McLovin. What's wrong?
I'm already hurting because Luka Doncic is the best player in the NBA, and I can't, like, disrespect him anymore. And then you throw Ethan at me?
And your 76ers get swept by the Boston Celtics.
I don't know what team you speak of.
You did not have a good weekend, McLovin.
No.
You did not have a good weekend at all.
I was screaming at the TV, cover Luka, everyone's going to make fun of me.
Did you make it on TV during the 76ers game?
Paulie's telling me to hold that
hold
story.
Hold it. Oh, it's a hold?
We have a reveal for you, Dan.
Ooh, okay. That'll be a little bit later on. McLovin, I believe, was at the 76ers game against the Boston Celtics.
May or may not have been. Did you know the Sixers were going to get swept, Dan? That was...
Well, we talked about the Eastern Conference, and I said, you're going to have really no competition there. There's not going to be any good series there. And for the most part, there wasn't. And we thought that there could be a couple of sweeps. If you would have said that the Nets were going to get swept, then I would have agreed with that. And I would have agreed that Milwaukee would sweep Orlando. Orlando took the first one. But as far as Boston and Philadelphia yesterday, now is the process still continuing in Philadelphia? Because I don't know how long a process takes, McLovin.
I think you're restarting the process. Tank again, I say.
Yes, Paul.
Should it be processed like it's over with the ED at the end? I think that's past tense. I don't know what tense is.
Just put a stamp of processed on it and then ship it down the road.
Yep.
Yeah, not good. You probably got a coach who's dead man walking in Brett Brown, and then you got to decide what you want to do with Joel Embiid and or Ben Simmons. Remember they brought in Al Horford? They brought in Al Horford because they wanted to improve the locker room. So they paid a guy $100 million to come in and help out in the locker room. That doesn't seem like a good process. It doesn't. Because if Joel Embiid doesn't know how to be a grown-up, or Ben Simmons can't be a leader, and you bring in Al Horford from the Celtics, and you go, yeah, we stole him from Boston, and you know what he's really good at? He's got a really good voice in the locker room. He's a leader. Apparently not that good a leader, because I don't know if anybody was listening to Al Horford. Certainly not Joel Embiid. Yeah, McLovin.
Are you going to mention that they traded the pick that could have been Jason Tatum for Markelle Fultz?
We've already gone down that road before. That one hurt. Jahlil Okafor, we could continue. Nerlens Noel. Yes, Paulie.
I have more bad news. The 76ers next year owe Tobias Harris $33 million, Al Horford $27 million. Yeah. They owe Embiid $30 million, and Simmons $30 million next season.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. You know, big numbers can be deceiving for NBA players. Sometimes guys are great at filling stat sheet, and they don't win. Now, this has been McLovin's big knock on Luka Doncic. Like, okay, so he puts up big numbers. Everybody puts up big numbers. Let's see if he does it in the postseason. McLovin can't make that argument anymore. Certainly not after yesterday. Playing on a sprained ankle, Doncic goes for 43, 17, and 13, erasing a 21-point deficit against the Clippers, then coldly draining the game winner in overtime as time expires. So the series is now two games apiece. When the playoffs started, I said if the Lakers were playing the Mavs, the media would make the Mavs out to be giant killers. But the fact that they were playing the Clippers, people weren't talking about Dallas pulling off the upset. They should be up 3-1. They didn't even have Kristaps Porzingis yesterday, and Doncic does this against the Clippers. So here we are, 2 games apiece. I don't know where we are with Kristaps Porzingis. Doc Rivers has got a problem here. Now, it's never as big a problem as the Lakers because the Lakers are the most prominent team in L.A. and in the NBA. But the Clippers might be a better all-around team than the Lakers, and you can't get everybody on the same page. You know, playoff P, Paul George, small P, hasn't done anything here. Kawhi played well. Lou Williams played well. For the life of me, I've never been told the philosophy that I'm going to agree with when it comes to a game-winning shot, potential game-winning shot, and the star player has the ball, single coverage. I don't get it. Don't understand it. All I want to do is get the ball out of Luka Doncic's hands. If Seth Curry beats me, great. Tim Hardaway Jr. beats me, great. The best player will never beat me. And what did we have yesterday? Kawhi Leonard, Mr. Two-Way, best two-way player, best player in the game. He's better than LeBron. Okay. You got your moment here. Paul George, one of the great wing defenders. Oh, they play great on the, you know. Okay, you got it. Here you go. Here's your moment. And what happens? Reggie Jackson gets switched off on Luka Doncic. Doncic hits a tough shot. But why is Reggie Jackson single coverage on Luka Doncic? Soon as Luka gets it, I go after him. That's it. I want him to pass the ball. Now, they might score two. Then we go into another overtime, but I can't let him take the shot. There are certain guys who want the ball in those situations. I can't let you have it. And Luka didn't shy away from it, but Reggie Jackson on Luka Doncic is not a fair fight. And I don't understand that. But they come back, they tie the series. And, you know, a lot of times you'll have a moment that announces to the world, the sports world, not just basketball world, the sports world, hey, that now we've seen something special. You know, Michael Jordan had that famous shot over Craig Elo. Now, it's not the same because Jordan had a legendary college career, hit the game-winning shot to win a national title. This was Jordan's coming out party with the playoffs because, you know, Jordan bowed out in the first round a few times in the playoffs. But now you got this skill set with Doncic, and maybe he takes his game and the Mavs game to another level because that's where legacies are born. You got to be great in the postseason. As great as Lamar Jackson is, he's not Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes has a Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson can win an MVP. Winning in the postseason is where you that's a status that you can't reach by just putting up numbers. You must have a win. And the whole country was watching. The whole NBA was watching. When you had everybody tweeting out about Luka Doncic, the players he plays against were like, whoa, you know, Steph Curry. You had a couple of guys with the Atlanta Hawks. You had guys with the Lakers. You know, like they were all going like, whoa, we're seeing something really special here. But as you move on with this series, I don't know if Porzingis, who had a question mark with his knee, not able to play, you know, Clippers got to start looking great here pretty soon because once you get into this next round, if you get into this next round, you got to be a lot more consistent than you've been. And it felt like the Clippers up 21, no Porzingis. All right, we got this one. We're going to go up 3-1. And then the Nuggets and the Jazz, like that was really tasty. Jamal Murray put up 50. And it was... Donovan Mitchell was great as well. So there, I know scoring is up. This could be the highest scoring postseason in the last 35 years in NBA history. I don't know what the reason is because you don't have a home court advantage unless that is the reason why, that you're not going on the road, that everybody's playing the same facility here. But defense is optional here. Yeah, Seton.
Is it maybe just a hyper-focus on basketball right now while you're in the bubble?
Could be. I'll ask Chris Webber this, but, you know, maybe all you have to do is just play basketball, maybe go fish, play golf a little bit, but it might be that. But I'm looking at, you know, you're averaging, the NBA is on pace for the high scoring postseason in 35 years. The average for all playoff games is 226 points combined per game. 226. And I'm watching yesterday with Murray. Murray played 43 minutes. He had 50 points. He had 7 assists. He didn't commit a turnover. 50 points, and they lose. We always go back to Utah, and I thought, I don't give him too much of a chance. Conley left because his wife was giving birth. Bogdanovich, who was probably their second best player, goes out with the wrist surgery. And I thought, at the beginning of the year, that was a team that could challenge for the Western Conference. And then all of a sudden, here they are putting the pieces back together. And I think most people thought Denver had the chance to be a spoiler in the West because of Bol Bol and Michael. Remember that talk? That didn't last long. They got Bol Bol and they got Michael Porter Jr. They got the Joker here. They got Jamal Murray. And they have all those items. But give credit to Utah because that was pretty amazing yesterday. All right, we got a poll question, by the way. Best and worst of the weekend, as we always do. What you saw that you liked, you didn't like, 877-3DP-SHOW. You can email. You can also tweet. And you have until the end of the month, the next greatpodcast.com. We have close to 500 entries. Submit your pitch, and I'm going to go into business. The winner, I'm going into business with you. You're going to we're going to produce your podcast. We're going to pick up to 10 semifinalists. We're going to give you $1,000 to produce a pilot episode, and it does not have to be on sports. We keep getting that question. Does it have to be just sports? No, it can be on anything as long as you think it's sustainable that you could put out at least 10 episodes. That's all I'm asking. A chance, you know, during the pandemic, you probably want somebody to listen to your pitch. Now you get a chance. You get a chance to have your own podcast, thanks to the great people at iHeartRadio who work with me on this process. This program is brought to you by Home Depot. With everyday low prices, even bigger savings when you purchase by the pallet. The pro's best option when it comes to flooring, the Home Depot. How doers get more work done. McLovin, what kind of poll question do you have for me today?
Okay, if we ask today who's coming out of the West, Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, Rockets, Mavericks, is it the Lakers? Who wins that poll?
Well, all of a sudden, the Lakers are all better, right? They had the game one loss, and then all know the sky's falling. And now they're playing a little bit better, and now we don't look at this as a possibility of them being upset by the Portland Trailblazers. Lakers still have issues. It's just Portland was not going to, I think, exacerbate those issues. The next round, probably those issues will be front and center on a more consistent basis. But I'm going to guess you'd probably still get the Lakers. I haven't seen greatness out of the Clippers. And goodness is not going to get you to the Western Conference Finals. I got to see some greatness here. And I need to see some consistency. So I would say the Lakers out of the West. What else do you have?
I was going to ask who wins this Clippers-Mavs series. I think that'd be close to 50-50.
It might be, but I would still say the Clippers because I don't know Porzingis' status. I think he had an MRI or is having an MRI. Can I ask Luka to do this again? And you erased a 21-point deficit. I mean, Doncic is 21 years of age, but you're asking. Now, he got help, though. Curry and Trey Burke, I mean, they had some help yesterday, but I got to have Porzingis in there. And if you say Porzingis is healthy, then this might come down to 60-40, people would think the Clippers over the Mavs. I mean, the Mavs are, they're legitimate. They were one of the highest scoring teams in the NBA. And you got a guy who is making everybody else better, not just one-dimensional. Yeah, McLovin.
Another poll, Trey Burke's former team, the Sixers. If they were going to trade one of these guys, Ben Simmons or Embiid, who would you trade?
You know what bothers me about Joel Embiid is his body language. You know, this is where you want a great player to be great. You're not going to beat the Celtics. You're not going to win the series. But this is where you have to say, in these moments, you can count on me to still be great. And body language-wise. Because he's got this ability to take over a game and really be a top five player. I just don't know if you can't occasionally want to be or act like one of the top five players. A top five player is great. I can count on him. He talks like a great player, a top five player. He just doesn't act like it. And the problem I see with the Sixers is there's a general malaise there that just says, yeah, we're not any good. We're going to get our coach fired here. Yeah, Todd.
And it's tough to be a leader and then have that immature response he had after the game. I know you're frustrated and you just got swept, but he was asked a very legitimate question that anybody should feel comfortable asking. And for him to react the way he did, I thought was a poor job.
Yeah, I thought it was embarrassing. Here's the question and Joel Embiid's response.
What do you think the issue is with this team? I mean, do you think it's the way it's built? Do you think it's coaching? Do you think it's the bad luck with the injuries, all of the above? What would you say the issue is? Because, you know, like Brett may...
That's a very stupid question. There's no issue. We're good. We just didn't win. We came out. We couldn't make shots the whole series. It's frustrating. You know, I felt like everybody played hard. We tried. Shots just didn't fall. And then at times... defense was not good.
It's not a stupid question. It wasn't a well-structured question. Just ask what is wrong. You don't have to give him, like, let me give you five options here. You know, this isn't the SAT. What went wrong with his team this year? That's all you need to ask. I mean, you got swept. You have questions. It wasn't just Ben Simmons being injured. I mean... Look at the Brooklyn Nets. And as much as I don't like Kyrie, I love what I saw with the Nets. They played hard every single game. They played like they wanted their coach to be hired full-time, Jacques Vaughn. They played like they wanted or felt like they could win every game. Now, they didn't, and they got roughed up by the Raptors, which we thought they would. But, you know, there's a big difference here. Those guys... didn't have necessarily the talent, but they did have the attitude to go out there and play hard. Remember when they beat the Bucks? They were 18.5-point underdogs. And that's when everybody goes, wow, wait a minute. The Nets without Kyrie and KD, and they beat, you know, the Bucks. And look, the Raptors are a dangerous team, probably the best team in the East. But the Nets played hard every single game. And the problem I have with what I saw with the Sixers, there was no enthusiasm. There was no sense of urgency whatsoever. And you pay the price. But Joel Embiid, be a leader. Answer the question. You got swept. We'll take a break. We'll talk to Chris Webber, get his thoughts on a variety of things, including why would you just have one person on Luka Doncic with the game on the line?
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I think we've come up with a new T-shirt, given the fact that this is the highest scoring postseason in the last 35 years in the NBA. There's no D in Orlando, so it's just a T-shirt that has the logo and it's Orlando. I think that that would probably be pretty appropriate considering what's going on so far. Chris Webber didn't play any defense. TNT's coverage of the NBA playoffs continues tonight with a triple header starting at 4 Eastern. Chris Webber will be on the call for Game 4 tonight between the Lakers and the Blazers at 9 Eastern. Good morning, C. Webb. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Why have we seen these crazy numbers as far as scoring, the highest scoring postseason in the last 35 years?
Well, you know, I said before this whole experience that I thought the bubble was the great equalizer. What I meant by that was, you know, the momentum isn't as tangible. You know, if you're a first-year player in the playoffs, it's not as intimidating. You don't have thousands of fans yelling at you. The energy. You saw Porzingis get a technical in his first game. Well, I expected that from young guys. He's been waiting to be in the playoffs for 5 years. So how do you manage that emotion? And here you don't have to, along with the travel. You know, after games, you know, usually last night you would have left around 1:30 in the morning, got to a hotel on the West Coast, the longest travel, 4:30 in the morning, had to eat, wake up this morning and have meetings. And so you don't have any of that. Everyone has the same routine. And I think that that's allowed for just some really good play, along with this is the most rested we've ever seen any players head into the playoffs. And I think rest has a lot to do with it because of the hiatus.
Explain this to me, because I'm still waiting to find an answer, that I never want the best player on the floor to have the ball with the chance to win the game. I would run two people at you. I want you to give up the ball. The Clippers allowed to have Luka to get the ball, and then even a switch on defense that Reggie Jackson ended up with him. I know that I look at the end result and he made it. I just don't like single coverage on the, you know, great players. And that was my biggest issue. Well, I had a few issues with the Clippers, but that one, explain that to me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just think the fact, though, that because Kawhi was on him, I think it was miscommunication. And So first of all, you're right in your strategy. Take it out the hot man's hands, you know. But the problem is on that team, you still have Hardaway and others that could shoot, but I'd rather have them shoot before Luka. But that switch, once you get into it, and that's the way that it was, and you got to look at the brilliance of his move. It's a move called the hands up. And hands up is when you dribble, you look up and you hesitate and you keep going. And because he can shoot off the dribble, his hands up is crazy. You have to honor every fake that Luka has. So one, you're right, it should have doubled. But when they didn't, I thought Reggie Jackson played as good a defense as you could, because you still have to watch out for the pump fake and him leaning into you that late. So that's what we call good D, better O. And Luka's just he's just starting off making a little resume for himself on why he's going to be a great one pretty soon.
Explain his greatness.
Okay. He's 6'8". He's strong. I'm talking about he's really strong. He's about 250, 255. He can get anywhere he wants in the paint because he's quick, because of his footwork. You don't have to be fast in this game. Fast is more for the John Walls and the Westbrooks when you're going full court. He's not that player that's going to go full court. Actually, he is. All he needs is a screen at the top of the key. And depending on how high they screen, he can either shoot a 40-foot three, a 30-foot three, or he can lay it up. He can finish inside. He can facilitate out of the post when he wants to. He's unselfish. And the best thing I like about him, Dan, that boy got heart. Did you see him talking to them the other day, letting them know? So for me, old school, that performance and the way that he was saying, I'm here, stop me, that for me, that was exciting. Even when he made the shot and it wasn't a crowd, to me, it was almost more exciting than a crowd being there, because you really saw the raw emotion of the team. And he's good, but most importantly, he's savvy. He's a leader, and he has confidence.
Okay, what do you do, if anything, if you're the NBA, to Montrezl Harrell, who had some things to say to Luka a couple of times during the previous game? You fine? Yeah, suspend?
Well, I think that's something for league offs to talk about. I also think that's the responsibility of the league, but I don't know if we need to see a player's mouth in slow motion every time they make a play. There's a lot of things said out there. And it's messed up. So first of all, saying stuff is one thing. So I don't want to speak on what he said. That's one thing, and it may be a suspension. And secondly, I know there were things that were said just as bad or worse in every game since I've been here. And it's just been whose mouth they put the camera on.
But what did you face? What did you hear when you played?
Ours was more questioning your manhood. You know, ours was more, you know, I very honestly, I really didn't hear a lot, because I will win a crazy contest. So you don't want to talk gun to the guy that'll win a crazy contest. And
wait, what do you mean you would win a crazy contest?
Well, I win a crazy contest. it was an old Fred Sanford episode where Lamont and Grady were together, and Lamont had a date in a bar, and this guy was going to beat him up. And so Grady told him, listen, just act crazy. And Lamont was just acting like he knew karate. And the guy was like, I'm not fighting you, you crazy. So for me, it was just that, you know, I'm kind of quiet. I'll talk junk on a move. But if we really want to get into talking, you don't want to do that, because I will talk to you every day for the rest of your life. Remember every game. And you just don't want that, because the stuff I could pull out, you just don't want. I mean, I've called a timeout. I've been to the worst. I can mind game you. And so my thing was just keep it quiet. But Gary Payton, he was I used to love playing against him, because he used to talk so much junk to my players. I remember the first game Pager played, and he told Pager, if you shoot the ball again, Pager made it. He said, shoot the ball again, I'm going to smack the hell out of you. And I won the crazy contest because I told Coach, hey, I got to get, you know, kicked out of this game to show Pager that, you know, I got his back forever. And me and Gary just, we just went at it. And we had the craziest talking match. And then we went out to dinner after the game. And it was a little WWF when you talk. But for some guys, if you don't know, it's real. But you just got to get through the mental game.
We're talking to Chris Webber, Turner Sports NBA analyst. Are the Clippers in trouble?
Yes.
Why?
Well, Doc Rivers told me before game three that they were lucky to be tied at 1-1. They're in trouble because, you know, it is almost like having a 4th-and-5 and running it every time, and you're on your own 30-yard line. you know how deflating that could be, you know. And when they penetrate, I mean, you think about it, this is the best, in my opinion, defensive team, especially on the perimeter, Pat Beverly or not. And so the fact that Luka has just been straight up able to dominate, kind of like Donovan Mitchell against Denver, when you have those type of series and those type of games, you know, L.A. knows that they could lose. You know, PG hasn't really had a good game in this series. Think about this. Porzingis didn't even play last game. He's an early game scratch, you know? So, yeah, they're in trouble. They're in a lot of trouble.
I don't understand the Paul George situation here. Is he injured? Is there something we don't know about Paul George that he has not been that great player he was in Oklahoma City?
It could be, but I don't know what that is. I like how he's taking responsibility, at least in game one and two. And some guys have slumps. You know, I thought he took some really good shots in game three. I thought he kept playing defense and staying involved. But, you know, man, I don't know what it is. Sometimes sometimes guys get the yips in the playoffs, or sometimes they just have a bad series. But when you have consecutive series in different years, it, you know, it does stand out to you and make you go, hey, what's going on? But, you know, as I'm interested to see tonight, we have the game. But after the game the other day, we asked Kawhi, you know, can you guys win without this? And I loved his answer. He was like, yeah, we can win. And Paul's going to come out shooting. So I'm just interested in seeing. L.A. to me has played Hollywood a little bit. Like when the Lakers didn't have Kobe, they were a little too cool and didn't win. And it was like the Lake Show without any substance. Well, that seems to be like what's going on with the Clippers now, because they used to come out and get on you defensively, stay on you, and it's just been a different team. Harold Montrez has to get into shape. He's not running off. So they're definitely in trouble, because Dallas is good. They have confidence, and they want to prove to the world that they can beat all of our predictions for champions.
Blazers take game one. Lakers have come back and look like we thought they would. Lakers still have issues?
I think they're still going to have issues, but they still have LeBron, so they're going to always have a chance. But, yeah, they have issues. They need shooting. They need perimeter shooting. And until they find that, I would force LeBron to keep scoring, or I would double-team him and take the ball out of his hands and just make the others beat you. That's what you have to do with LeBron on the floor. And so, yeah, that's going to continue to be an issue, and they're going to have to continue to find ways to overcome their shooting walls.
76ers game plan, is it – now officially processed, because the process doesn't continue after what we saw in the bubble here. What's next?
Yeah, I think you blow that team up.
Who do you keep?
It depends on who the locker room likes.
But I just brought this up, Chris. They brought in Al Horford. They spent $100 million on Al Horford to come in and be a locker room presence.
An older Al Horford.
Yes.
An older Al Horford that can't play like he used to. Yeah. I questioned that decision then.
Yeah.
You think about it, the Celtics made an offer and they didn't want to see him go, but they were like, for that, okay. see you later. So, yeah, I think you have to question some decision makers, even letting Redick go. I mean, they really had some good pieces there. And you think about it, losing 25 games consecutively, twice in a season, tanking to get to this point, talking about the process, monetizing the losses, and then getting here and it being this way. It's really disappointing. But I think you're going to have to make a choice between Simmons, and you're going to have to make a choice between Embiid. It's just anytime you hear rumblings between players, that to me, just blow it up early, because it can't get any better. And then you see in the playoffs with Embiid by itself, you can't do it. So they're going to have to figure something out, but definitely start with whoever they keep with those two, or one or the other. They're going to have to get some shooting around that individual.
Kobe would have turned 42 yesterday. What's your favorite memory about him?
Man, I got so many. Just the rivalry. You know, we used to talk about that a lot, and he understood. And the reason why he was so great was because he understood that he's one shot away from losing. He respected every opponent. That's why he treated them all as if he was playing against Jordan or Bird or the best. And so my favorite memories are just being around him talking basketball, or hearing a little snide remark about the Kings from him slipping. And I'm like, what'd you just say about it? Those two things. And then just loved watching him mature after. You know, as athletes, you know, we're all, our family support us so much. And, you know, they from what you being on the road, they support us so much. And so after retirement, you just want to give back so much to him. And it's just, I knew he was looking forward to this part of his life to spend with his family.
I still find that amazing when he put up 81 on the Raptors, then he went to dinner and Jalen Rose was with him, or he went to dinner with Jalen Rose and Jalen was on the Raptors, and Kobe ordered a martini and he asked for 81 olives. Did you ever hear that story?
No, but that's cold. That's cold. And I bet he brought them all there and had them on a toothpick.
57, 58, 59.
That's a great quote.
Great to see you. I hope you're doing well in the bubble there. C-Web will be, let's see, game four tonight. Lakers and the Blazers. That's at 9 Eastern on TNT with Brian Anderson. Great talk to you, C-Web.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Paulie has a quick who's do you have any theme music for Who's Stats?
Who's Stats? Who's Stats? What you want? Tell me. Who's Stats? Who's Stats? What you want?
Dan's still adding it up if we have some filler music.
Okay. I want your stats. I want your stats. Stats are natural, stats are fun. The only question is, who's stats?
Dan, I need just a little more time.
Okay.
Sets. All I really want is sets. In the morning, tired of sets. Cause the evenings are for girls.
Okay. So the evenings are for girls. Okay.
Dan, whose second year NBA stats would you want? This is their second season in the NBA, both about 20-ish years old.
Okay.
Player one, 27 points per game, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 35% from 3, 42 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. Player two, 29 points per game, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 steal, 32% from 3, playing only 34 minutes per game. Who is whom?
Who?
Player one, Dan?
Player one, LeBron.
That's correct.
Player two, Luka?
That's correct.
All right.
That's some serious stuff.
Yeah, it is.
No matter. You know what they say? Well, you can't compare to LeBron James yet. Why can't you? I know his accomplishments aren't near, but at the same stage.
And that's the point I always make when people go, stop comparing him to Larry Bird. And I said he's better than Larry Bird at age 21. Larry was in college at Indiana State. And Luka is doing this in the NBA. So, yes, he is better at Larry than Larry at 21. Just like I thought Larry was better at age 30 than LeBron was. And then Larry's health went down after that. And then LeBron blew right by him. But Luka is better than Larry at age 21. And you could make a case he's better than LeBron at age 21. What were Larry's second-year stats?
Larry Bird was 24 his second year in the NBA. He averaged 22 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. Mm. Not really much of a three-point shooter yet at that point in his career, percentage-wise, but in no volume. And he averaged about 40 minutes a game.
It was on this day a year ago, Andrew Luck retired. So, remember, that was a preseason game. He's on the sidelines. Adam Schefter's at a wedding reception. He gets word that Luck is going to retire, and then I was told he was going to retire on Sunday. So, it was a Saturday night. Andrew Luck's on the sidelines. Fans started booing him that he decided that he just didn't want to play anymore. And they got him out, and he was going to announce, you know, make his announcement, and his family was going to be there on Sunday. So, you have that. Tom Brady then decides he doesn't want to play in New England and goes to Tampa Bay. Antonio Brown is completely out of football. Phillip Rivers becomes a Colt. Phillip Rivers, I think, joins us on the program tomorrow. Teddy Bridgewater goes to the Panthers. Cam Newton leaves the Panthers. He goes to the Patriots. Joe Burrow would be the number one pick. Lamar Jackson would be the NFL MVP. The Packers would take a quarterback in the first round of the draft. What a crazy year in the NFL. And those are just the top stories in the NFL. Everything else that has happened here during the pandemic, all of the stories, what's been shut down, kept alive, the bubble, what's going to happen with the NFL, college football. There is a groundswell of support in the Big Ten to play football. And this, what happened was the presidents voted on this, and the athletic directors and coaches, I don't know if they had much of a say-so in this with the Big Ten. And you've had this groundswell, but from what I'm told, the Big Ten is not playing football in the fall. They're not going to walk this back. You've heard nothing with the Pac-12. But with the Big Ten, there was a groundswell of support led by Justin Fields. But from what I'm told this morning, the Big Ten is not playing football. They're talking about the spring, but I think that's a pipe dream. I think what that is doing is basically saying, okay, let's take it off the front burner where it's really hot and boiling. We're going to put it on the back burner and let it simmer a little bit just to give you the hope that we would have football. And I don't think you're going to have football in the spring. Fritzy said Philip Rivers on Wednesday. Reggie Miller turns 55 today. He will join us on the program tomorrow. And Charles Barkley, I think, joins us on Wednesday as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Todd.
You got it.
So those are just the NFL items here. But when Andrew Luck, see, I thought Andrew Luck, that he finally had what he needed, what he should have had. You spend $100 million on your quarterback, and then you spend 50 cents on your offensive line. And then you go, boy, I don't know if Andrew Luck's enjoying this. And then you build this good, really good team there. And an offensive line, got a running game. It just felt like everything was in place for Andrew Luck to maybe take that next step to show he's a great player, a Hall of Fame career. But that was the one that you went, wow. Like Brady going to Tampa Bay, you know, once you started listening to the people who kept telling us, giving us hints here, then you realize Brady just wasn't happy there. Antonio Brown, and maybe he gets back in. Remember when he went, he was on Hard Knocks with the Raiders last year, and he did that cryotherapy, and he burned, you have to wear slippers in there, and he burned his feet. Now, I've done the cryotherapy, and it is extremely cold. And they tell you, you can only stay in there for like 2 minutes. And he didn't have shoes on when he did it, and it just fried his feet. And I thought, okay, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, maybe made a mistake there. And all of a sudden, no, there was more to it with that, with Antonio Brown. And he might play this year. Second half of the season, somebody's going to try to pick him up. I don't know who's going to pick him up, but somebody's going to try to pick him up. Yeah, Paulie.
I was going back and looking at some articles around Andrew Luck right before he retired. About two days before he retired, he tweaked his ankle in a practice. And like to interview him after practice, he's like, oh, it's all good. I'm feeling great. All is well. The coaches were like, oh, everything's fine. You know, he has nothing to do with his shoulder. It's a little ankle tweak. Full speed ahead. That was 48 hours before he retired.
Yeah, and we still keep thinking, man, is he gonna stay retired? And when I talked to his dad, his dad goes, no, he's enjoying being a dad. I think he still lives in Indianapolis. And then you got the Earl Thomas situation. You have two of the best run organizations in NFL history, in my opinion. The Ravens and Seattle. Both of those organizations have let Earl Thomas go. I guess Dallas could use him. Whenever there's a story that you can somehow, you can say, well, Dallas, no matter who it is, it's like, hey, Dallas. It's because you want clicks. Because if I say, you know, the Bengals might be interested in him, nobody clicking on that. Dallas might be interested. Hey, they need a safety. Hey, what about if he goes back to Seattle? I don't know. He flipped off Pete Carroll while he was being carted off on the field. But I think there's... I look at Earl Thomas the way I do Antonio Brown. Like something changed with them. Earl Thomas didn't say anything. Antonio Brown was a story you rooted for. And then all of a sudden something changed. I don't know if it was, you know, that this is traced back to CTE, any kind of head injuries, but the fact that the Ravens, the leaders on the Ravens, went to management and said, we don't want him here anymore. It seems like, you know, it's not a one-off. This is a pattern behavior. And Earl Thomas was on, he was on a rocket ship to the Hall of Fame his first 5 years. I thought he was the most valuable defensive player on that Seattle Legion of Boom team. He kind of cleaned up everything. But somebody's going to pick him up. Somebody's going to give him a chance here. But I hope that the bigger picture, as I've said with Antonio Brown, you might be giving him a chance, but there's other things going on with Antonio Brown. And Earl Thomas made the Pro Bowl last year. He started 15 games. He made the Pro Bowl. They're going to take a huge salary cap hit. They must really want him out of there. Yeah, McLevin.
I think he still makes the Hall, though. Because people forget. And I mean, T.O. made the Hall of Fame. And
nobody... Oh, T.O.'s one of the great...
Yeah.
No, T.O. The fact that they held him out, it was really embarrassing. Because T.O., are wide receivers selfish? Yes. Just about every single one of them. But I had to overlook some because his numbers are crazy.
But Thomas and Antonio Brown will both be fine. I mean, Thomas is going to make it. He's got a championship. He's a million all pros and Pro Bowls.
I don't know if he has a million, does he?
Well, he has 7 Pro Bowls and 3 first team all pro. I'm looking at.
I mean, that's it.
You ever hear quarterbacks talk about him? He's like Ed Reed light.
Yes. I'm right there. I thought that he was the best player on that defense. It's just, he's going to have a strange back half of his career. And that would... I think he becomes borderline now. You know, he went from he's a Hall of Famer to he's borderline now. Yeah, McLevin.
What about Antonio Brown?
I don't know. I mean, the numbers are really impressive, but everybody's numbers are really impressive. I don't. He was great, but I don't know if people are going to go, he was a difference maker. Or you can't put in guys who played in the same era with him and then not put him in. Like, I don't know how that works. Like, people are still saying, Edelman's a Hall of Famer. No, he's not. If there's a Hall of Fame for Super Bowl performances, you can put in Julian Edelman. But that's it. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Good. In the Super Bowl, absolutely, first ballot Hall of Fame wide receiver in the Super Bowl. He had 2 of the greatest, biggest catches in Super Bowl history. Keeping drives alive. And he was there when you needed him. Yeah, Paul.
Antonio Brown did all his work before age 30. He had 700 catches in 6 years. I'm sure that's going to be one of the best of all time. But last year, he had 4 catches. This year, he may have 0 or 30. Those numbers are going away fast. He'll be stuck at 841 catches. If he's a guy with 1,000 catches, which he would have breezed by if he started the season and last season, it's hard to keep him up.
Yeah, but 1,000 isn't 1,000 the way it used to be. I remember when Tim Brown was trying to get into the Hall of Fame. He got in, and they go, well, he's got 1,000 catches. Back then, 1,000, we were starting to go, yeah, but 1,000 catches. Chris Carter, you start to go, how many catches do you have to have now to be a Hall of Famer? Like Michael Thomas, at what point does Michael Thomas become a Hall of Famer? Because if he ends up with 1,100, 1,200 catches, is he a Hall of Famer? Now, we don't look at a wide receiver and go, yeah, but how many Super Bowls did he win? Michael Thomas is going to, he'll have the fastest start for a wide receiver in NFL history as far as catches, I'm going to guess.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend. Let me get to Ted in Tampa. Ted, good to hear you again. How are you?
Hey good morning, Dan. 30 years Army Special Operations. Best and worst of the weekend. Best of the weekend was the Echo Challenge World's Toughest Race. It was on, they televised it live. ocean paddling, ocean swimming, swimming through rivers that are 50 degrees, climbing and ascending from waterfalls 300-400 feet tall. A couple of guys had actual heat strokes. A lot of people had hypothermia. Incredible race. They have it every year. I'd like to try to get the Danettes to commit.
No,
four-man team.
No.
But
no.
Got the, worst of the week, Dan, is the worst offensive tackle statistically and de facto. Bad for Tom Brady, has reported back into the Bucs camp. He wrote a letter saying he wasn't going to play for a cut salary and he wasn't going to play for the COVID virus reasons, but now he's reported back because, like Ari Gold, he left the team and he said, "Who's with me?" And he looked behind him and Lloyd wasn't with him.
All right. Well, thank you, Ted. Ted's squeezing a lot in there. Ted has problems with that Tampa Bay offensive line.
That World's Toughest Race, though, thing is awesome. I'm a little behind where the finale is. I'm only like three episodes in, but it's really good.
We're not going to be competing.
You don't want to be like an adventure racer?
No.
No. Why?
No.
You go see the world?
Why? Well, I can see the world without doing it where I might put my life on the line. Yeah, Paul.
I would like to travel to watch guys adventure race. I would love to sit there and watch it anywhere at any location.
You're like mountain biking in some crazy land, then you're sailing in a little raft from one island to the next.
You know what I've done that's dangerous is a pub crawl.
Yeah.
That's about as dangerous as
that I. That is dangerous.
And people almost got injured. That was the pub crawl with Bill Murray in New York City, the A to Z pub crawl. First of all, it's called an A to Z pub crawl. So you go to a bar that has the letter A, and then the bar that begins with B, and then there's C. And so you have to have a drink at each place. So if you do the math, if you get to Z, it's 26 drinks. So we go, and we start out. I think we got to J, H-I-J, somewhere in there, and there was an altercation, potential for an altercation with Bill Murray. And Bill didn't mean any harm, but the guy thought that he was making fun of him, and Bill wasn't. He might have been. And next thing you know, we're ushering Bill out the door with his brother, and that ended up the pub crawl, the A to Z. During that pub crawl, we were in the Village on 6th Avenue, and there was a street cleaner that was, the engine was going. And the guy was in a convenience store, and Bill and I walked up, and Bill goes, "You ever been in one of these things?" And I go, "No." So we jumped up on a street cleaner in New York City, and Bill was ready to pilot the street cleaner, and this guy comes running out like, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know, and Bill's like, "Hey," and he pops his head, and guy goes, "Bill Murray." And he's like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, okay." Like, basically, you could take it for a little bit of a spin. And then we got out of this machine, and I'm thinking, could you get pulled over for drinking and driving of a street cleaner in New York City? I mean, that imagine that police officer going, "I'm going to have to arrest you, Mr. Murray." Yeah, Paul.
That would be a show, Bill Murray going around the country and committing small crimes and getting out of them because he's Bill Murray. No one's going to arrest him. Nobody wants to say anything bad to him.
All right, let's go around the room. Best and worst of the weekend. Todd, I'll start with you.
My best of the weekend on Saturday, the Padres hit their fifth Grand Slam home run in six games. San Diego became the first team in MLB history to hit Grand Slams in four straight games during a sweep of the Rangers in a home-and-home series.
I love my Padres, man.
They are, for real.
And I love that Fernando Tatis, you know, that people have an opinion on him. Because so many players are irrelevant in baseball. He's good, and he wants you to know it. And I love that he has fun with the game. The problem, biggest problem with baseball is nobody has fun because everybody is worried about hurting everybody else's feelings. What else do you have, Tom?
My worst of the weekend, what the ref, I like to call this one. Heat Pacers game three Saturday. Miami went to the free throw line 52 times, including 20 trips just for Butler. Pacers only went 28 times. Sixth the most free throws attempted by one team in a playoff game that ended in regulation since the year 2000.
McLovin.
Okay, my best is going to be Seth Curry, who's shooting 111% from the field.
That's not true.
He's shooting 65% from the field. Unbelievable. My worst is Paul George, first player to shoot under 25% in three straight playoff games since Bob Cousy in 1960. Yeah, unprecedented bad.
Bob Cousy, he wasn't a good shooter to begin with. His career field goal percentage, is it 40%?
Bob Cousy couldn't shoot?
No, he couldn't shoot.
What was he good at? Dribbling around?
Like, no, he could dribble. Seton will. It's one of my favorite impersonations that we do when Seton does the Bob Cousy.
Unstoppable.
Yes. And then you have that old archival footage, and it's unbelievable. The 76ers have no answer for Bob Cousy. He's a magician. And he's dribbling right hand the whole time. And I'm going, how about somebody make him go to his left here? Yeah, Seton, best and worst of the weekend.
My best of the weekend, the Cleveland Indians had a pitcher make his major league debut this weekend, Tristan McKenzie.
Yeah.
Went six innings, pitched two hits, a run, a walk, and 10 Ks. What's the best part of it, though, he's 21 years old, but he doesn't look a day over 15. He looks just like a baby out there, and he's just bringing heat. Really impressive debut. My honorable mention best, though, is Donovan Mitchell, who's just not really getting a lot of attention necessarily. I think Luka's sort of stealing the spotlight, yeah. But yeah. He's having a hell of a playoff run. And my worst of the weekend is the false positives in the NFL. Right. Dang, like, that's feels like an omen of things to come, or at least just one of the many possibilities of things that could go wrong here this fall.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next hour when Al Michaels joins us. Paulie, best and worst?
Best, Jamal Murray versus Donovan Mitchell, the Nuggets Jazz game.
He picked the wrong day to score 50.
Yep.
After Luka's game winner, 43-pointer.
And so my wife goes, what are you watching? I go, I'm watching the Nuggets Jazz. She goes, you're making those team names up. Those aren't real team names. I'm like, they are. She goes, all right, prove it. So I had to show her those are real team names.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's bring in Al Michael. Whoa, look at Al. Albino outside there. Got flowers there. Looks good.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Dan, we also have occasionally some hawks and crows that come by. So I've had to hire because I don't want anybody to interrupt us.
Oh, well,
I have
you.
My own security. I have a security force here. I have three of these guys, right? So the plastic owls, let your audience know, if you have crows and hawks in your backyard, go to a gas station, get some ceramic plastic owls for about $1.20 a piece, and that will do the job.
And you know what?
So we're good. We're good to go.
You know what we call those? Owl what do we call Michaels. Those?
There you go.
No.
Very, very good.
Thank
Dan.
You.
Very good.
Thank
the
you.
Comedy stylings of Dan Patrick. You haven't lost an inch, my man.
What was the first?
Welcome, by the way. Welcome to Peacock.
Well, thank
welcome.
You. Thank you.
Cool.
What was the first NBA game that you called? Do you remember?
The first NBA game, well, I did it for 2 years back in the 2003-04 season, Christmas Day, 2003. Houston at the Lakers. It was Yao Ming as a rookie. It was the Kobe, Shaq, Gary Payton, Karl Malone year with the Lakers with Phil Jackson threatening to retire, which he subsequently did and then came back. So that was the first game I did. I did it with Doc Rivers. I was looking for a partner. They wanted me to do the NBA. The funny thing is I wanted to get some practice games in that year. And so Mark Jackson had retired and was living in Santa Monica, and we went down to Staples and we did the game, and Mark was good. I remember Mike Pearl was the executive producer of the NBA, and Mike said, what'd you think? And I said, you know, Mark's going to be really good someday, but he's green. He hadn't done it before. I hadn't done basketball in like 25 years. So I really needed somebody who had some experience. And then my good fortune was that Doc Rivers got fired by Orlando that year. I think they started 1-10. And then he and I danced the dance that year. And then he went to Boston, and I did one more year of the NBA with Hubie Brown, the great Hubie Brown, who's still going strong. That was number one.
When you're calling a game in person without the audience, like how I don't know if you've done that, but like a small crowd, like how much does it help in you doing your job?
Well, I do have some experience because when I did the San Francisco Giants in the mid-70s, 74, 5, and 6, terrible team, horrible ballpark, cold. On an August night, I remember in maybe 75, playing San Diego. Each team is 22 games out of first place. Nobody's there. It's cold. It's terrible. Bitter. And they handed me a sheet with the attendance figure. And I looked at it and I said, here's tonight's attendance. Let me just tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Jim McAlpine have come in from Mill Valley. Harvey Pelukian has driven up from Milpitas. The Bernstein family came up on a station wagon with the dog, but they left the windows open in the parking lot. And that's what you do. And it's so much more fun, obviously, when you're doing it with a big crowd and great crowd noise. So this is going to be interesting. And we're going to start, you know, in Kansas City, they're supposed to have maybe a quarter of the stadium. So that's 2 weeks from Thursday. We'll see. I don't know what that's going to sound like. Everybody's supposed to wear a mask. And then 3 weeks from last night, we're right back here. We open up this $5 billion stadium in Inglewood, which is tremendous. It's unbelievable, with no fans. Cowboys, Rams on Sunday Night Football. So it's a lot of trial and error, Dan. We'll see how it works out.
Is there plan B if you can't go and you and Chris have to call it by remote?
I've not heard of that. I think that would be extremely difficult, and I would not like that at all. I think basketball is in a relatively confined area, so I think you can call basketball more easily than you can the other sports. Baseball, fairly similar in that regard. Mike Emmerich, of course, is the greatest. I mean, Mike doing hockey, whether he's in the arena or sitting in his home in Detroit, I mean, I'm watching him the other night thinking, he's not missing very much. He's missing maybe 2%. And that 2% is because he's not there. And you've got Pierre Maguire, who's there. So that's working out well. I think football is very tough because you have to see the field. You have to see how they align. It's all spread out. And on a 40-yard pass downfield, that's going to be a very difficult thing to call. And plus, you can't feel it. There's a rhythm to the game. Yeah. Even though there's no crowd, you know, maybe you'll put in some – crowd noise, which I think is working fairly well with these other sports. So I would much prefer to be there, and hopefully we don't have a plan B and we don't have to do a game off a monitor.
Do broadcasters need the preseason? We know the players do to a certain degree.
I don't think so, except in this particular circumstance. This is to paraphrase our great buddy Jim Nance. I mean, this a tradition like none other. This is a season like none other. So we have to go through a lot of the protocols that the players do, that other people who are going to be in the stadium. So there are a lot of things to think about before we get on the air, and that's the only thing I'm concerned about, because for the most part, normally our first game that we would do would be the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. Almost every year that I've done the NFL, that's how we start. And you get into a rhythm fairly quickly. So you don't need preseason in that regard. But in this particular case, I think it would have been helpful to just see, hey, how do we get into the stadium? What do we do? How do we travel? What happens around the game itself? I think once we get on the air, it'll be fine.
Talking to Al Michaels, of course, the play-by-play voice, NBC Sunday Night Football. I can't believe that we're a couple of weeks away from the start of this NFL season. And then you had this false positive outbreak with the NFL, with the testing. Al, if this is 2 weeks from now, I mean, this could shut down a game, I'm guessing, or I don't know what kind of damage it would do to the game.
Well, I see that the lab said there was some contamination. I mean, this is not likely to be necessarily a one-off. We've already had false positives. We know what happened with Matthew Stafford. So this is a day-to-day thing. I mean, right now, the league is on schedule to start 2 weeks from Thursday. A lot can happen between now and then. A lot can happen on that Thursday morning. Who knows? You know, what if a Patrick Mahomes test comes in positive, but it was a false positive? We don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here. But, you know, there's so much, as you know, over the last 6 months, contradictory information. Don't forget, when this thing started, oh, it's a winter thing and everybody's sick right now and we'll get to summer, everybody will be fine. It only affects old people, not young people. That turned out to be 100% false. So we don't know. And everybody says, believe the science. Well, that lab in New Jersey is part of the science, right? So at this point, this is an ongoing saga. Hopefully it has a smooth road to travel. And we get to the end of the season. I think, you know, right now, I think the season looks like it's going to start on time. We're ready to go. Everything seems to be fine, but it's a long way between now and February.
we see these second-year quarterbacks make a jump. We've seen this in recent history where, you know, and then they become legitimate MVP candidates. You know, Mahomes is the latest in Lamar Jackson to be able to do this. But when you see these quarterbacks, like, what is the one thing that would stand out that you saw the jump if you want to, you know, Lamar Jackson from one year to the next, Patrick Mahomes, maybe Kyler Murray this year? You know, optically, what is it that you see where you go, that's different than the year before?
And then go all the way back to Russell Wilson. They can run and they can throw. I mean, they can do both things. So is the day of the drop back in the pocket quarterback Tom Brady over? No. I mean, Tom's still pretty good. And, of course, that's going to be one of the great stories this year to follow what happens with him. But it's I don't want to say the new breed, because I was, you know, reading the other day about, you know, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes have changed the game. Go back to Randall Cunningham. He changed the game, too. And I think Sports Illustrated had a story on the cover in 1988 and called him the ultimate weapon. So you go back to a guy like Cunningham, who did a lot of these same things. So we've had these quarterbacks through the years who came in and were able to do both things. And now you've got, I mean, you know, with Mahomes and Jackson, I mean, I don't want to say taking it to a new level, but these guys are, I mean, they're not only great, but they're also exciting. And I think this makes the game better. And people want to see them. Not only are those guys good, but they're exciting. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's what you look for. But you need special talent to be able to do that.
But we're embracing that style now, Al, whereas before it felt like these coaches and GMs fought that style.
For sure, Dan. And why wouldn't you? I mean, look at the problems you present for the defense. I mean, if you're defending Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or somebody like that, you're looking at it from a defensive coordinator's standpoint a lot differently than going up against Tom Brady, for sure. Because Tom Brady's not going to do the things those other guys do. But so it gives you, I don't want to say more of a headache as a defensive coordinator, because they've figured out ways to do it. But it's something else to think about. I mean, with Mahomes, and we proved it last year, the play is never over. The play is never over. But, you know, then again, you've got other pocket quarterbacks like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, coming off an injury. But, you know, Ben, a few years ago, I once likened him to trying to tackle an apartment building. He may have gone into the pocket, and everybody's around him, and they're at his feet, and, you know, trying to knock him down, and somehow he escapes. So, you know, these guys come in different styles, different models, and it makes the game even more fun to me.
You sneak in a gambling reference occasionally, right?
Yeah, sure.
Have you bet on games?
I have not. And I'll tell you why. I love to go to Las Vegas. I mean, I love to play craps. That's the greatest game ever invented. But I don't bet on sports. And Dan, you've been around it so long. It's so funny. We know so much. I mean, Chris and I and Fred Godelli and Drew Esikoff and Michelle Tafoya and our core group, you know, we meet with the players and the coaches, and we know the owners and the general managers and the personnel people. And, you know, nobody studies more tape than Chris. We don't know who's going to win the game. We'll drive out to the game and go, what do you think? You know, and 50% of the time we're wrong. So the great thing to me about sports, the wonderful thing is everybody thinks they know, but they don't know. You don't know. And that's why I love sports. And that's why I don't bet on sports.
I bet when I was younger, and I thought I knew it all. And I realized I didn't enjoy gambling. I didn't watch the game. It was driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. And then even if I won, I still didn't enjoy it. And then I went cold turkey. I lost the Orange Bowl. I lost $3,300 on an Orange Bowl.
That's a lot of money in those years.
Yes,
wasn't it?
It was. It was a lot of money. And I was up $6,000. And I lost $3,000 and then the VIG. And then I quit. I walked away, bought my mom a dishwasher, and paid off some school loans. But that I have never, and you know, people always say, hey, do you want to put down a dime on this? Or, and I go, nickel. No, I don't want to do that at all. But people always come up and they'll say the following: who do you like? And I go, no. I had Pete Rose ask me and Bob Costas at the 1986 playoffs between the Mets and the Astros. Pete comes up to us on the field. He goes, who do you like? And I said, I don't know that Pete's gambling. I'm going, well, hey, you know, you got Mike Scott, and the Mets can't handle Mike Scott. And he walks away, and Bob goes, why did you tell him that? I go, I don't know. He goes, he's going to gamble. He's going to bet on that. I'm going, oh, my God.
Nobody knows. I mean, they you know, I mean, to me, there's so many examples of you think you know. Look, there are so many statistics and analyses out there right now. And somebody will say to me, well, you know, what about the fact that, you know, on any given Thursday, this I'm going, stop it. And it's so true, because especially in all the years I did the Triple Crown, and I think I did 15 derbies in a row between 1986 and 2000 with a great Jim McKay and others like Hank Goldberg. And people would come up to me at Churchill Downs walking through the grandstand. Who do you like? And I would go, Seabiscuit, or I would go Man of War, and they would look down at the program. Well, where is he? What race is that? And nobody knows, but this is why sports are so great.
When's the last time you went to a game, doing a game, and you were absolutely wrong in what you thought was going to play out? Or the other way, that you were absolutely positively correct that this was going to happen?
No, never. I mean, I'd have to think back, you know, to like last year. You know, there are Sunday night games that just turn out to be the exact opposite of the way you think they will play out. And we've had a few of them last year. I mean, one game, we didn't do the game, but we did the game the following week when Minnesota played the 49ers in the playoffs, and Minnesota shocked New Orleans. You know, you think the Vikings don't have any chance to go into the dome and beat the Saints in that particular game. And then the next week, you kind of, you know, as we're doing Minnesota at San Francisco, now you're thinking about, well, they beat New Orleans, so now do they have a chance to beat San Francisco? And analyzing that game, we just felt that they'd used all of their energy and whatever it was that enabled them to beat New Orleans. And, of course, San Francisco knocked them off relatively handily. But it's, you know, look, the other thing, too, is I'm watching, you guys were talking about it before. I'm watching that game yesterday, and somebody said to me, well, you know, what do you think of the way that they're doing the NBA and the NHL? And I said, it's pretty good. I'm getting used to it. But that game yesterday, that Clipper-Dallas game, was so compelling in so many ways. And, of course, the dramatic and fantastic ending to that game, I thought, you forgot about all of the rest of it. You forgot it's in the gym. You forgot it's the fake fans. It's the dog, the animated dog, and all that stuff. You forgot about all of that. And it just became a great basketball game. And that was a terrific game. You know, Doc Rivers is a great pal of mine. And, you know, I like to text Doc after the game and normally congratulate him. I didn't know what to say. You know, this is like, it's, you know, not quite a death of a relative, but I mean, that was a bad one. And I just wrote to him last night. I said, look, in my mind now, the Mavericks are out of miracles. That's it. you'll get them on Tuesday night.
And you're the king of miracles.
Well, I know about one anyway.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we pull off another one. We have an NFL season here in a couple of weeks. And great to talk to you. Hope everything's good. I know you got a busy day probably. What are you doing today?
I'm taking these guys out for a walk. No, today we've got a couple of Zoom calls. We're getting ready for the season.
Oh,
you know, we're talking about what we're going to do. And, you know, we got two games that first week. We've got Houston at Kansas City. Come back here for Dallas at the Rams. So I'm immersed in it, my man.
Good.
Studying for the final exam.
I love it.
Welcome again. This is great. Have a great long run with you and the Danettes.
Thank
you. Guys doing okay?
Yeah. Everybody's being smart for the most part, I think. Yeah. We're trying to be non-essential, Al.
Stay that way.
Thank you. We're good at that.
Be good.
The great Al Michaels.